What's up, guys? Thanks for coming to our Kaafa and Miss You podcast. Here, you will find resources to help you grow in real devotion, real community, and real responsibility, so you can learn to love Jesus, not just for a season, but for a lifetime. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
So this is going to be different. So I'm going to preface and get ready because Charisma turned off my music, so I can't just pray and ask for peace anymore. I'm just kidding here. Okay. But I will get ready while I talk about why tonight will sound a little different, because I have a tendency, I'm very philosophically minded. Like, I want to ask the questions that can, as objectively as possible, show that something is empirically true. Because if something in the Bible is, if this is claimed to be truth and there is a truth claim in here, then a truth claim must be logically consistent, empirically accurate, and like experientially true in people's lives. Like, people can experience it, and like that's an experience they have also. All three. The problem is that with most religions, it's there's not a lot of logical consistency. There's not a lot of objective empiricism. Like, I can't talk about the needs in the human heart, and we can see something the Bible says is true just by looking at that need without actually even saying something from the Bible. So that kind of stuff is my favorite. However, as you can tell, I'm not smart enough to say it without my manuscript. So I think it all out, I reason it all out, I research it, and then I write it out so that you guys don't have to get confused by me. And I've often been told, Charisma, that I'm still confusing. No, I'm just kidding. It's because English is her fourth language, right? That's her fourth language, and she's a master at it. Tonight, I don't have a manuscript, so the consistency and accuracy of language, I am inclined to prefer. I may not have that, so bear with me while I will speak slower in order to allow my mind to catch up to what my mouth is trying to say. Also, speaker's closet to you, what? Is that to me? I got a text. Is that for me? Shannon, did you get that text? Cool. Stage right. Is that my right? Okay. No, that's audience right. Okay, let's just get going. I was trying to find where I'm trying to get to as I was talking, and I wasn't because I was thinking, and I can't think and turn pages at the same time. Okay. All right. A few months ago, I was just spending some time with the Lord, and I was primarily asked, I don't know what I was asking him about, but I remember very clearly that when I was probably asking about the staff, like the staff source, like, what do you want us to know? What do you want us to grow in? Like, what do you see we need the most? Like, what essentially, just what do we need? Like, I just want you to tell me. Like, I could come up with a lot of creative stuff, but you could just get straight to the point with what's necessary right now. And the only thing that came up was love. And so for a whole semester now, or at least half the semester, we've been talking about what love is, what love does. And the reason being is because out of every law in the Old Testament, all of them, Jesus says that all of the laws and the prophets can be summed up in this, or can be accomplished in this: to love the Lord your God and to love your neighbor. Meaning all of this, like there's a law that says if you see a hole in the ground, you're supposed to fill it, or else your neighbor's donkey will fall in, and that's your fault. And you're like, how am I supposed to remember to fill every pothole or whatever? And like, I remember when I read this, and this part, just this one clicked. There's ones about parapets, like the edges on flat roof houses. You need to have parapets so your friends don't fall off the roof when they're walking up there for some reason. And so, but it made sense because love, I didn't want to define it first, but I'm going to. So far, and we'll walk through how we get this, is love is unselfishly choosing for what's best for someone else. So I unselfishly choose what's best for someone if I say I love you. And so if you're walking on the road and you see a hole in the ground back then, and you think, well, Christian's going to be coming behind me in like 30 minutes with his donkey, I should probably fill this because maybe his donkey will fall in. Really, that only costs me time and effort to fill in that hole. I get no benefit out of it. Who gets the benefit of me filling in the hole? Christian and his donkey. And so, like, that's an example of, like, love unselfishly chooses for someone else, meaning I get no self-interest out of it. Maybe I get something, maybe I don't. That's not the point. Make sense? And so he's saying that all of this law in the prophets can be accomplished by this thing. And then he says, later in 1 Corinthians 13, at the very, very end, he's saying, all of these remain, but the greatest is love. He says, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest is love. Meaning, one day when we die, there will be nothing else to hope for. All that the Christian is meant to hope for is to be with God, to be with Him, to have Him, to want to long to be with someone you can't see right now, that you hope you're hearing rightly, and then this hope that I can't wait till I see you face to face and I hear you perfectly. That hope. There's nothing left to hope for when I have it. So hope is gone. And then there's faith, like I'm trusting in these things He said, but I don't need to trust in this anymore. I have Him. And He tells me I'll listen. Like, so faith is gone when I get to see Him. There's nothing left to trust in without seeing anymore. Like, I can just follow the one I see. But the only one that will still remain is love. Even, like, after death, it's like, I will still choose unselfishly. I will still be called to choose unselfishly for the highest good of those around me. And so love is the greatest one. And so, yeah, he says that, and then he says, so then we're trying to figure out, you might be asking, you have a nice definition, sounds great. Anyone can come up with a great definition. How do we know what an objective definition of love is? I'm sorry, did I take this too far for myself? Okay, I'll keep it here on my chin. I've always wondered, can you tell it's here? Is that noticeable? You're like, he always puts it there. Is it kind of normal now? So is this better? Does this look weird? Our old director used to do this. And I don't know how it picked up his voice, but he also had biceps the size of my thighs. So it just looked good whatever he did. I was like, I do want to go lift after this, yes. And whatever else you said tonight. But lost my train of thought. The other thing is that since I didn't write these scriptures down, I actually have to find them. I should have been finding it while I was making that ridiculous comment. Where am I at? Okay, John 15, there it is. Okay, if you have your Bibles, which I surprisingly now realize how many of us don't have our Bibles. Yeah, Tristan. I needed a Bible tonight and you didn't have one. Marisa, I see it rubbed off on you and it's not your fault. I think I blame him. I'm just kidding. I still love you. So yeah, if you have it, which you should, because the most beneficial thing you as a small group leader, or anyone that ever wants to teach you something that's wise, can ever do, the most beneficial thing for you is to know where it comes from in Scripture, because then it's easier to latch onto with all that you have. Does it make sense? Like, something can sound nice and make sense, but if there's nothing objective to ground it in, like there's nothing solid to ground it in, it's just my thoughts. And my thoughts may change. Your thoughts may change. The way I feel today may change from tomorrow. Like, but this doesn't change. And yes, 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 we get it. The Bible's, I know, I get it. Like, translations, years, we can talk about that some other time. Which maybe we should do that at Chi Alpha. David, should we be doing that stuff at Chi Alpha? Or is that like a separate session kind of thing? Yeah, should we talk about things like science in the Bible or validity of the Bible? What do you think? Who said that? Is that Anthony? Because that sounds like Anthony. Yeah, that makes sense. I shouldn't have said that out loud. Who else said yes? All right, we got 2-3. Okay, we may have to do it. No, I'm just kidding. It's like, wow, 3 of you decided, so we all do it? That'd be awful. Not to say the decision is awful. Sorry. I haven't turned anywhere. I'm on Matthew 22 still. John 15. Just so everyone knows, I magically turned there in one attempt. Wow. The Lord is with me. Okay. So Matthew 15:13. Okay. Where are you at? All right, so this is my command. So I'm going to start in 12. That you love one another like I have loved you. Now that sounds really nice. They've watched it, they've seen it, and that might feel overwhelming. And so, or they're all dumb and like, I don't remember how have you loved us. So it makes sense. Like if this is his command to me, Lord, please tell me how this looks. How do I do this? And then he says, there is no greater love than this, than someone lays down his life for his friends. There is no greater love, no greater example of love. It seems like an objective truth statement he's trying to make. If you want to define love, because everyone has a billion and one definitions nowadays, and some are awful, like bleh, like awful, like I can't listen to it, awful. And it's okay. They're genuine in intention, maybe. Greater love, there's no greater love than this. Someone lays down his life for his friends. Okay. So, why is this the best example? Because to lay down your life means it's over. To say, my life ends here so yours can go on. Who gets the benefit in this deal? The one who goes on. It's like all of us at this age, imagine there's life ahead of me. There's so much enjoyment ahead, whatever hopes and dreams you have, it's so much ahead of me. To lay down all of it and say, like, it's over. Like, the curtains are shut so that theirs can go on. Like, all the benefit is theirs. All the cost is mine, and it's a great cost. And so we get the idea that this is a selfless choice. There's no greater love than the selfless choice to lay down your life for someone else. And then, whose benefit? Who is the one? Whose benefit is this for? The one laying it down or the one being laid down for? The one that's whose life gets to go on. The one whose life is being laid down for. This is for their good. It's not good for me, like at all, but it's good for you. Makes sense? Like, so then this is where we get the definition. That love is unselfish. I'm laying down my life, choosing for the highest good, the best for someone else. Make sense?
Yeah.
And then he says, I'll say lay it down. Meaning, what he does not say is I feel like laying it down. The greatest example of love is when I feel like laying it down and I lay it down. The greatest example of love is when I'm motivated to lay it down. It is the greatest example of love is choosing what is hard to choose when it's best for someone else. Sometimes loving someone can be easy. Because what the thing that benefits them kind of implicitly benefits you and you find enjoyment in it. But love is tested when it costs you everything and they get all of the benefit. That is unselfishly choosing. Love is also tested when you don't feel like doing it. Some people may think about marriage one day. Now, some people are like, no, experiment, like have fun, like this and that. And I get it. Like I thought that way. I get it. Like, there's always tendencies and like longings to like do that kind of stuff. But like there's something that is refined and created in you when you learn how to daily choose to love someone despite them, in light of them, when they're awful, when they're great, when you feel like it, and when you don't feel like it. I heard someone say one time when I was playing disc golf, and he was a really philosophical thinker, which made this very fun. I was like, I asked him, what is love? Like, what does it mean for you to love this girl that you seem to love? You say love a lot. What do you mean? It was another definition that was forgettable, so I forgot it. And he essentially mentioned feelings, like had a lot to do with feelings and like this and that. And I said, well, what about choice? And like, wouldn't you want someone that even when you are awful, even when you suck, even when you don't live up to what you know is good and you live up to what like you know is awful, like you do something bad, hurtful, you hurt someone, wouldn't you want someone who daily is going to wake up and say, even in spite of you, I choose to love you? And for some, I didn't get it. Maybe I've repeated it to myself too much, but that didn't sound appealing to him. He's like, no, I only want her to be with me if she feels like she wants to. Like she feels like it that day. And I was like, what happens when she feels like sleeping with another dude? Like, I hope you're willing to give her what she feels like, because like feelings come and go for no reason. Like, I hope, you know, like, but someone that chooses you, even when you've hurt them, even when like you've been awful, even in spite of you, even when you haven't loved as well as you ought, like it's something special for someone to know you, to know your history, to know what you're really thinking, like here and now, to be honest with someone and for them to still love you and say, I want to be your friend. I know you. I know you. I know what you're thinking. I know what you've done, but I still want to be around you. That's different. And this is primarily, I guess guys and girls can do this, but I don't know. Not sharing, not being honest, not being vulnerable. Like people see that as a weak like thing. Like it's so weak to not actually be known. Like you're just hiding, like cowards hide. Yeah. Trying to put up some facade, like I'm strong and I don't deal with stuff. Like that's a coward. I'm hiding. Does it make sense? Like it's a lie. And you're not really loved. Like some other version of you is loved, you know? But when you're honest and vulnerable and you actually like share your story and what you're really going through, like you could come up to me afterwards. I might hurt my feelings, but you'd be like, yeah, tonight was awful. You need your manuscript more. Like, don't do that again. And at least I'd know, like I know you. And I'm not going to not want to be your friend. I might sit at home and be like, what did I do? I shouldn't have done that. Why did I feel so confident in this? Like, but I'm not going to not want to be around you. Make sense? And that's different when what's real about you is still known and still loved. Make sense? So that was literally just, what was that? Lay down your life. Okay, so love is unselfishly choosing what is best. Now, what the definition of love has been, or the example of love has been, is I'm here to support you all the way. Like, you want to go do something stupid? I will hold your hair back while you throw up. I will cheer you on as you jump off that roof. Like, I'm like, that is not love. That is encouragement of some kind. Like, it's definitely like, I got your back, but it's not like, it is not this definition of love. If that is not best for you, to go jump off a roof to impress someone, to do something stupid to impress someone, I would hope someone would tell me that may not be a good idea. It doesn't mean I'm judging them. I love them. My child will one day try to do something that's going to hurt them. I cannot make them at one point, at some point in life, I cannot make them do what I want. But I will tell them, I'll say, baby girl, like little bud, this is not good for you. Like this is not good. This is where this will go. And it will hurt you and it will hurt someone else. Make sense? Like, that's love. It's like, you don't let someone hurt themselves. If you find yourself watching people do stuff around you that hurts them, like they're just destroying their lives, they're creating addictions of alcohol or anything that one day will tear apart a family, because it will, and now it's good and fun, but that person will have that when they're married. That person will do that in front of their three-year-old, and then they'll lash out and throw a lamp across the room. If you find yourself watching stuff like that now, and not saying anything, I'm not saying you are wicked. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we just have to own, I may not love them like I thought I did. Because love would not let them just do it. I should at least interject somehow, even if it's a little. Like in my heart, I should at least feel like I want to help. I don't want to see them do that. But if you find yourself indifferent towards people doing stuff, like, I don't love them like I think this definition is. I might care for them in some way. Makes sense? Like, this is meant to be like self-reflective. We say we love one another. You love someone. I love you, mom, whatever. Like, but do I just let people do stuff that's harmful for them? You know? Because love, even if it costs me the friendship, I have to say something. Like, I love them. Make sense? Okay. So, the ultimate example of love, oh, we only have like 5 minutes, is the cross. Jesus got nothing out of the cross except us, which is not the greatest of rewards. Because we know ourselves. Like, I can be kind. I can try to give myself away as best I can. I can try to be a benefit to the world and to like all of you and to my friends and my family. But like, I know how awful I can be. You know? I know how awful I've been in the past. And so for someone perfect and amazing like Jesus to die, so like to have us, like he doesn't get much out of it. we get all of the benefit. You know what I'm saying? Like, he experienced on the cross complete hopelessness so that we would never have an awful situation in life where there's not something to hope in. It doesn't mean like you can't hurt. It doesn't mean you can't be sad. But like anything and everything is going to fade away or die. Like people we love are going to die. And like he's the only one that cannot be taken away from me. And I can hope in being with him for the rest of my life. Like there's never a situation so awful that he's not there, that the hope of him is gone. Make sense? And so on the cross, like there's this hopeless situation. Like, Lord, why have you forsaken me? This was the first time in all of eternity that the Father and the Spirit were away from him because he had taken on all evil, and like God can't be friends with evil. And like, it'd be like the closest person to you saying, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Like whoever that might be, your parents, friends, whoever. I don't want to talk to you anymore. But worse, like infinitely worse. You know, they've been friends forever. And then they're just like, we can't look at you. And that hopelessness, that loneliness, that like isolation, so that we don't have to be isolated, even when we're alone in a room somewhere, even when no one's talking to you, even when you're alone and hopeless, whatever, like you don't have to be. You don't have to be isolated anymore. So we get all the benefit. And everything he says in the Bible, everything that the Lord commands us to do is always for our highest good. If he is love, it says God is love, then from his own character, whatever he says is for our good. It's like he says it because he sees it's best. Not just to have rules, not just to this. And he even summarized it. Like, it's as simple, like just love me and love one another. It's simple, not always easy, but like simple. So you want a simple way of walking with God? Just ask yourself, am I doing what love would require? Today, like there needed to be a switch with something, like a last minute change in something, and it costed one person more than it costed the other, but one person needed it. What would love require? If I can meet that need, I'll meet it. If I can't, I can't help it. Like, I just can't. But if I can, I want to meet it. If you need help, like, and you ask, and I can help, love would require that I help. That's what love would do. And it's just ask, like, do I actually love my friends? Do I look at my friend and say, I would do that for you? Now, if you're like, would you lay down your life for me? I'd be like, I would have to think, because that's a really deep, it's a real amount of love. Like, that's saying my children won't have a father like me. Well, not me anymore, at least. You know, like, I have to really count the cost to give a real honest answer. Like, that's hard. I would want and hope I could work through the thought and say, with like, I would hope I think of the Lord and his love would fill me. And I would say I would. And I would trust the Lord to take care of my family. I would trust my friends to take care of my family. I'm not saying that's what I'd say, because I don't know if I believe that in myself right now. Make sense? But like, you ask yourself, do I actually love my friends? Like, we call one another friends. Do I love them? Do I love my parents enough to tell them the truth that this is harmful? You know? So, 4 minutes. We have time, so let's go to 1 Corinthians 13. I will give you a quick context to this just to make sure we know why. This is read at weddings and whatnot, and that was not the intended purpose of it. But essentially, Paul's goal with these Corinthian letters is he wants the church to be unified. Because, and he even says, like, all of us are different. Each of you has different talents, different attitudes. You're just different. We're different than one another. But there is still a way to be unified with diversity, which is literally, ironically enough, university. Like, that's unity among diversity. That's like the composition of those words. And so that's Paul's goal with these letters, is he wants the church in Corinth to be unified among other ones, but he wants them to love one another and be unified despite the differences they have, despite some having these gifts, those strengths, being like this. And so then, sandwiched right in the middle of these two, in 2 Corinthians. If you've gone to 2 Corinthians, you're too far. If you went to 4 Corinthians, you're not in the Bible. That is so corny. That's a church joke, huh? That we got that from Faith Community, huh? That's not good. Corny. Faith Community is good. The joke was not. Okay. So what Paul is trying to do is he's saying all of you have different gifts. You have different strengths. A lot of you have things that I don't have. Some of you are smarter than me in a lot of ways. Others of you are kinder. Others are talented in ways I'm not, and I shouldn't be jealous of those things. I shouldn't be like envious of those things in you. Like I have chicken legs like my dad. I can't get big old like J legs. You know what I'm saying? Like I can't, like, no matter how hard I try. So I just work on upper body, which doesn't do much either because I go once a week. So anyways, he's saying, let's just get to love. He's pretty much saying it doesn't matter all these things you have. It doesn't matter the gifts you have. It doesn't matter how well you can speak. He's saying, if you do not love, I might as well be a loud, like just banging like pots together. It's just annoying. It's loud. It does nothing. It just causes distraction. People can't focus on what's like actually happening. Make sense? Like without real unselfish love, like all the gifts you have, all the talents you have, the Lord has given you, it's like pots banging together. It's just like a noise you're waiting to end, you know? Like, and the Lord has given so many of you, all of you, like just special, special things. But like he wants you to use them for him and for others, you know? And you get to enjoy a lot of that, which is awesome, you know? Okay, so let's just get into what love is for this last 90 seconds. Love is patient and kind. It's like, it's not quick to like, I'm going to like quickly lash back at you. That dude looked at me like, you look at him, what the heck? What, you're looking at me? Like, even internally, you feel yourself like not kind and patient. Like, I met a dude last night at the church. That dude was a gangster. Like, he grew up in a rough place. And like, not here in New Mexico. I mean, like real tough stuff. And like, he was like, I don't have time to get in all my stuff. But yeah, he is different now. Like, he could knock a dude out at work that gets in his face. And he told me a story of one that did. And he just was like, I put my hands behind my back and I said, look, man, like, I don't know what I did to upset you. And like, but if I did something, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't mean to. And like, I want to help you out. And the guy was all up in his face and he just kind of stopped and he didn't know what to do. And he's like, that's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. Like, whatever. And this guy could have knocked him clean for getting in his face like that. He was a boxer for 18 years. Like, and like, he just chose to be patient and kind. Like, having strength and unleashing it uncontrollably, like, my 3-year-old can do that. That's not special. Like, it takes self-control to be patient and kind. A 3-year-old can lash out and say whatever they want. You see what I'm saying? I have to teach my babies not to do that. So if we're in our 20s, uncontrollably like blabbering our mouth off in anger, getting in people's faces in anger, like I can help. Like I'm teaching my 3-year-old, but like that's nothing to be proud of. You know, like love is patient and kind. Dang it, my 90 seconds is over. Where'd my thing go? Let's just do this one because this was big. This was big, and I'll end here. That love does not envy. This is insane. Like, it's only two of them. And envy, I think, is a really big, big thing. Envy is the inability to be happy with someone else's happiness because you're mad that you don't have it. So for me, playing in school here, if someone else got to start at a game, like they got to pitch and I didn't, then it was envy. Like I wanted to be there. I wasn't happy that they were there. Like, I'm a teammate, so sure, whatever. But like, in my heart, I wanted to be there. Or like, someone's making more money than you. Can you be happy that they are happy, that they get much? Like, love can be happy in other people's happiness. Love is happy when you get something I don't get, when you get the thing I was longing for. And that's like another really good test of real love. Like, am I happy when my friend gets things I wanted? Am I happy when they get better fortune than I do? Am I happy when they get the job I was trying to get? You see, like, can I be happy for them and rejoice with them and celebrate with them? And like, it's okay if you can't right now. Like, you have to be honest and tell the Lord that. Like, I am not happy David did A, B, C, and D because I wanted to do that, but I hate that I feel that way because I don't want to feel that way, you know? And you just tell him, like, be honest about what you really think and feel, but like, then tell him, I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to think that way. Make sense? And that's only two parts of love. There's like a whole thing. Like, so anyways, love, like, if we're actually going to, I've realized, like, we can do a lot on this campus. We can do a lot of cool things. We can change a lot of lives. The Lord can use all of us. But if we don't do it because we really want and love people and want to, we believe with all our hearts that, like, them giving all to God is what's best for them, then, like, you're going to look back and be like, I just kind of, like, did it. Or I made people do things. I didn't do it because I love them. Like, I'm convinced after thinking through it, researching, studying, listening to debates, like years of it, that the best thing for each of us is to let God run our lives, because I can do a minuscule good job of it, but he can do it way better. Things that I wouldn't have dreamed of, he knows will make my life richer. He could use the things you want and actually still make your life richer. It doesn't, you know, like, I believe that it's best when we let him run our lives. And I will forever continue to try to help people see the reality of that. And like, if you believe it, then you should never feel any guilt or shame wanting people to love Jesus, because you believe this is best for them. Because that's what love would do. Make sense? So I'll pray and then we'll go. Jesus, we love you. I hope we love you. Help us to think about our hearts and ask if we really would lay down our life for you and want to love people. Will you just fill us with a desire to love like you love and care like you care and be the kind of strength and compassion and that you would define it as, not whatever tough and strong the world defines it as. Help us to be strong in the ways that you say is strong and worth something in the ways that you say is worth it. Jesus, we love you. Will you please speak to us? Help us all to hear your voice and long to hear it more and more. Thank you, thank you, thank you for changing our lives, for being our friend when we don't deserve you. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. All right, next week, are we out there? Okay, so next week, I guess you're not going to...